Welcome to the Verity Podcast for Tuesday, March 26, 2024, where we separate the spin from the facts. I'm Scott Wallace with today's headlines. The UNSC votes in favor of a Gaza ceasefire. Four suspects in the Moscow attack appear in court. The UK accuses China of being linked to malicious cybersecurity attacks. Senegal's ruling coalition concedes defeat. NBC faces backlash for hiring former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel. Trump's $464 million bond is lowered. The EU investigates Google and Apple under a new Digital Markets Act. Boeing CEO resigns amid a leadership shakeup. Rishi Sunak announces a major nuclear energy initiative. Nigeria's army rescues abducted students ahead of a ransom deadline. And the UK is reportedly facing a sickness-related employment crisis. Our top story, the UNSC votes in favor of a Gaza ceasefire while the US abstains. The facts on this story are agreed upon by BBC News, The Times of Israel, Guardian, UN News, and Reuters. The UN Security Council passed a resolution on Monday calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and the immediate and unconditional release of all Israeli hostages. U.S. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said there was no shift in our policy, adding that the U.S. backed a ceasefire but did not vote in favor of the resolution because the text did not condemn Hamas. Seemingly in response to the U.S. abstention, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced that he would not send an Israeli delegation to Washington to discuss alternatives to a major push into Rafah. Kirby said the U.S. was disappointed by Netanyahu's decision. Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, who is currently in the U.S. on an official visit separate to the delegation that was originally supposed to arrive Monday, called the UNSC resolution scandalous, warning that if Israel did not achieve a clear and absolute victory in Gaza, the situation on Israel's northern border with Lebanon could escalate. As tensions with the U.S. continue to simmer over a Rafah offensive and the amount of aid entering Gaza, the U.N.'s primary agency for Palestinian refugees, the UNRWA, which Israel accuses of working with Hamas, said on Sunday that Israel has barred it from delivering aid to northern Gaza. UNRWA Commissioner General Philippe Lazzarini said that Israel had created a man-made famine in northern Gaza, calling its decision outrageous. Heavy fighting erupted in Khan Yunis on Monday after Israeli forces encircled the Al-Amal and Nasser hospitals. Last week, Israeli forces conducted a raid into Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza, and Israel has said Hamas uses hospitals as military bases. Though attacks have significantly decreased, rockets from Gaza were also fired into southern Israel. So those were your facts. Now for our narrative spins, beginning with the pro-establishment narrative from CBS. The U.S. is doing everything it can to ensure both that Israel can eliminate Hamas's military capabilities and prevent regional escalation. Israel must be able to defend itself from terrorist attacks, whether from Gaza or elsewhere. And the U.S. will always support Israel in maintaining its security. However, Netanyahu is going too far with the war in Gaza, and he must be willing to follow through on his promises and compromise as needed so that another extended truce can take effect, which will hopefully lead to a more permanent resolution to this conflict. Security can only come through peace. We have a pro-Israel narrative from the Jewish News Service. Allowing the UNSC to pass such an outrageous resolution demonstrates that the Biden administration no longer believes that supporting Israel is worth the political capital. Caving to pro-Hamas fanatics, Biden is willing to throw Israelis under the bus to try to salvage his political career. The world has forgotten the atrocities Hamas committed on October 7th and Israel's moral duty to protect its citizens. This resolution only serves to support Hamas's political narrative. And we have a pro-Palestine narrative from The Nation. Though the Biden administration may produce crocodile tears on command over the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza, in reality, U.S. military support for Israel is the primary reason the war has lasted this long. Israel would simply not be able to maintain a war of this magnitude for such a long period of time without overwhelming U.S. intervention. Yet Biden behaves as if it is Israel that calls the shots. Palestinians are starving to death in a man-made famine, and all the U.S. can do is express disappointment and abstain on watered-down UNSC resolutions. And finally, we have a statistics-based nerd narrative from the Metaculous Prediction community. They say a 67% chance that Israel will have de facto power in the Gaza Strip on January 1st, 2025. Our next story, beaten suspects appear in court as allegations are traded over the Moscow attack. Here are the facts on this story as agreed upon by the Daily Mail, BBC News, TASS, the Associated Press, and Politico. As Russia observed a national day of mourning, four of the 11 men held on suspicion of carrying out the Moscow concert attack in which at least 137 people were killed were charged on Monday. Two of the men pled guilty to the attacks. However, the four citizens of Tajikistan appeared to have been beaten, raising questions as to whether they were tortured. Two of the men had black eyes, and the face of a third man was badly swollen. A fourth man was brought in on a wheelchair and reportedly drifted in and out of consciousness. They will be held in pretrial detention until at least May, the court ruled. Monday's hearing came amid continued apportioning of blame for the attacks. In televised remarks on Saturday, Russian President Vladimir Putin suggested that Ukraine had a part to play. He said that the 11 suspects were detained as they headed toward the country, alleging that, according to preliminary data, a window was prepared for them on the Ukrainian side to cross the border. Putin added that the investigation is ongoing and that all the perpetrators, irrespective of, quote, whoever they are, whoever is guiding them, will be punished. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky did not offer condolences and instead blamed Putin for the attack. Zelensky said, "They fight against us and they don't care what's happening inside their own country." Meanwhile, social media channels affiliated with the Islamic State group claimed responsibility and posted previously unseen footage of the attack online. The U.S., later followed by France, also said they had intelligence that showed IS was responsible for the attack. Early on Monday, the Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman, Maria Zakharova, rejected the U.S. assertions for who was responsible, accusing the U.S. of trying to cover up Ukraine's tracks. However, later in the day, the Kremlin spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, gave a more watered-down response, stating that it could not currently comment on IS culpability. All right, there's your facts. Now a pro-establishment narrative from Reuters. While Russia may cast doubt on IS responsibility for the attack, the terror group has posted multiple verified videos of the attack. A number of U.S. intelligence officials also said they have seen evidence that showed the group's culpability for what happened. By all reasonable accounts, it's IS who is to blame. The pro-Russia narrative comes from TASS. While the Kremlin cannot currently comment on IS's alleged culpability at this stage, President Putin has already stated that the suspects were detained on their way to Ukraine. That in itself raises a number of questions that have to be answered. All who helped orchestrate, irrespective of which faction they represent, will be held accountable. And a nerd narrative from Metaculous, there's a 33% chance there will be a large-scale armed conflict in Russia before the year 2030. The UK's deputy prime minister claims China is linked to cyber attacks. Here are the facts. As agreed upon by the Evening Standard, the BBC, and China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. UK Deputy Prime Minister Oliver Dowden, in a speech in the House of Commons on Monday, accused Chinese state-affiliated actors of being responsible for two malicious cybersecurity breaches since 2021. In August of 2023, the UK's Electoral Commission revealed that from August 2021 to October 2022, hostile actors had accessed the records of nearly 43 million voters who registered between 2014 and 2022. Dowden, who revealed China's UK ambassador had been summoned concerning the allegation, accused Beijing of attacking the Electoral Commission as well as conducting reconnaissance activity against members of parliament in 2021 through Chinese state-affiliated group APT31. Dowden also said the attacks were unsuccessful because they were blocked by parliament's cybersecurity system. He announced sanctions against two individuals and one entity associated with APT31. Meanwhile, the U.S. unsealed an indictment against seven Chinese nationals. In response, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Lin Zhan said it opposed illegal and unilateral sanctions and asked other countries to stop spreading disinformation and work with China to create peace and security in cyberspace. So those were your facts. Now for our spins, the anti-China narrative comes from Conservative Home. The UK government must push back against China immediately. Beijing's consistent attempts to influence the direction of the UK from the shadows while committing a series of human rights violations domestically can't be tolerated. London's relationship with Beijing must be drastically reimagined with immediate effect. And the pro-China narrative from Global Times. The UK's baseless allegations against China are without evidence and merely an attempt to politicize the issue of cybersecurity at the behest of Washington. The UK's smear campaign is both illegal and ineffective, and all sanctions will merely provoke a legitimate, tough response from Beijing. An establishment critical narrative is brought to us by The Guardian. Despite the threat, the UK has been slow with its meek reaction to Beijing's attacks. The government seems both scared and tentative to do any more than apply weak sanctions to minor individuals connected to Beijing. The government's current response to attempts to undermine British democracy has so far been desperately lacking in teeth. And another nerd narrative from Metaculus, there's a 10% chance that if China invades Taiwan before January 1st, 2035, the UK will respond with military force, according to the Metaculus prediction community. News from Senegal, the ruling coalition concedes defeat. The facts on this story are agreed upon by Africa News, Al Jazeera, BBC News, Radio Free International, Le Monde, and CNN. Senegal's ruling coalition candidate, Amadou Ba, has conceded defeat in the presidential election, calling opposition candidate Bassirou Diomaye Faye on Monday as early results trends indicated he clinched an outright majority to win in the first round of voting. This comes as several contenders have already congratulated Faye on his claimed victory after the initial count. Previously, Ba's campaign stated that opposition celebrations were premature and that a runoff vote would be needed in the worst-case scenario. A runoff vote would be required if no candidate secures more than half of the votes. Official results are expected by Tuesday, but local media has tallied the results posted outside the thousands of individual polling stations across the country. The winner will succeed incumbent President Macky Sall, whose second term, marred by economic hardship, unrest over the alleged persecution of opposition leader Ousmane Sonko, and claims Sall sought to extend his mandate beyond the constitutional limit, ends next week. Fiai, the second-in-command for the dissolved PASTEF party, ran for president as Sonko was barred from running in elections by the Constitutional Council over a defamation conviction. Both opposition leaders were released from jail in mid-March. Like many other countries in Africa and globally, Senegal, considered one of the most stable democracies in West Africa, is struggling with high unemployment and a cost-of-living crisis due to record-high inflation of 15% in 2022. So those were the facts. The spins on this story start with narrative A, from Democracy Now. That the Senegalese people were allowed to elect an opposition leader who was imprisoned just days before the election is an impressive surprise, especially after all attempts from Sall to cling to power beyond his constitutional term, including postponing the vote. His victory is also a triumph for the country and its democratic system. Narrative B comes from APAN News. Despite the opposition spreading baseless allegations of potential electoral fraud in favor of the ruling coalition, Senegal has demonstrated once again that it remains one of the most stable countries in West Africa. Millions went to the polls peacefully, further indicating the maturity of both the Senegalese people and democracy. And a nerd narrative from Metaculus, there's a 15% chance that Senegal will experience a successful coup d'etat before 2040. And now shifting to the world of media as controversy continues over NBC's hiring of Ronna McDaniel. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Politico, The Wall Street Journal, The Boston Herald, Forbes, Newsweek, and The Associated Press. NBC might face an employee boycott after it hired former Republican National Committee Chair Ronna McDaniel as an on-air political analyst, causing backlash at the network. McDaniel served as head of the RNC for the past 7 years, pushing former President Donald Trump's claims that the 2020 presidential campaign was rigged, and even urging two Wayne County, Michigan officials not to certify the country's election results. The former RNC leader, who will reportedly earn $300,000 per year, debuted Sunday in a previously scheduled interview on Meet the Press, during which she said that President Joe Biden won the 2020 elections and people convicted of violent acts on January 6, 2021 should not be freed. Shortly after her interview, NBC News chief political analyst Chuck Todd told Meet the Press host Kristen Welker that their bosses at the network owed her an apology for putting her in, quote, this situation. Though top network executives are said to have unanimously agreed to hire McDaniel, internal backlash began Friday on text chains and Slack channels after an email was sent announcing that she would appear across all NBC News platforms. On Monday, MSNBC Morning Joe hosts, former GOP Congressman Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, said on air that the network should hire, quote, conservative Republican voices to balance its election coverage, not what they called an anti-democracy election denier. Oh boy, we've got some political narratives on this story. Let's start with the left narrative spin from The Atlantic. McDaniel's lies while serving as RNC chair give her no credibility, and her stint at the RNC was marked by failures, including the 2022 midterm elections. She brings little value to NBC viewership and even her fair share of criticism from MAGA viewers. If NBC wants to bring an alternative voice, it could do much better than someone furthering institutional, anti-democratic rhetoric. And a right narrative spin from PJ Media. In a democracy, it's important to represent various points of view, especially on national news networks. It's not surprising that liberal voices at NBC are droning their intolerance for McDaniel, but hopefully the news executives will stand up to the resistance and allow McDaniel to provide her side of the news events that will be affecting the nation. And we have a cynical narrative from Michael Socolow's X account. There are likely financial reasons behind this deal, as McDaniel's hiring is drawing fire from both the MAGA right and the left. Whether this involves potential corporate mergers or dynamics between the political operatives and media outlets is unclear, but McDaniel shows that the cross-pollination between the pundits and politics is way too much. And finally, a nerd narrative from Metaculous. Once again, they say there's a 10% chance that in the 2024 U.S. presidential election, any state will officially submit results to the Electoral College that are different from the projected winner of that state. Trump has 10 days to pay a lowered bond. The facts on this story are agreed upon by ABC News, NBC, CBS, Fox News, CNN, and the New York Post. Former President Donald Trump on Monday had his $464 million bond owed to the state of New York in its fraud case against him lowered to $175 million in a decision by an appellate court. The decision comes just as a 30-day grace period was set to expire and gives Trump 10 more days to post bond. Before the ruling by a panel of state appellate division judges, all appointed by Democratic governors, Trump was on the hook for a $454 million bond plus additional interest of more than $111,000 per day. Trump's lawyers argued that posting the full $464 million was a practical impossibility, and 30 bond companies declined to cover the full cost, instead opting to wait for a ruling on his appeal. New York Attorney General Letitia James could have begun seizing Trump's assets had the enforcement period not been delayed. The presumptive GOP nominee for president was ordered to pay $454 million when a judge ruled he misreported his net worth to secure better loan and insurance rates. Trump said he had the cash on hand to pay the $175 million within the 10-day period, but he will keep fighting the decision. The ruling pauses penalties imposed on Trump and his family, including a ban on their ability to run a business in New York and secure loans from New York financial institutions. The bond will be in place until at least September, and James enforces the judgment against Trump until then. Trump, who maintains his innocence in the case, must file his appeal papers before September's oral arguments. If Trump loses, he will owe the total penalty amount unless it's lowered by a court. All right, got some more political spins for you. We got Daily Caller with the pro-Trump narrative. Thankfully, these developments show that some semblance of justice remains in the U.S. The $464 million bond was an extreme expression of the far left's weaponization of the courts in the aftermath of the politically motivated judgment. Trump is on his way to defeating the swamp. Daily Beast counters with an anti-Trump narrative. Trump has received an undeserved lifeline, as James must now wait an additional 10 days before she can start seizing Trump's assets. But the decision doesn't let Trump off the hook, and he will still be liable to pay the full $460 million plus when he loses his unreasonable and far-fetched appeal. And a nerd narrative from Attaculous, they claim a 50% chance that Trump will be elected the U.S. president in 2024. Next up, the EU is investigating Google and Apple under a new Digital Markets Act. Here are the facts, as agreed upon by Al Jazeera, The Verge, Wall Street Journal, and The New York Times. The European Commission on Monday announced EU regulators will investigate Google, Meta, and Apple to ensure the companies are abiding by the EU's new Digital Markets Act, or DMA, which took effect March 7th. Regulators will determine whether Google and Apple use their app stores to prevent competing developers from promoting their apps, and also probe Meta's new ad-free subscriptions and data-based advertising. The DMA dubs six major tech companies as gatekeepers and requires them to allow users to change default apps and uninstall pre-installed apps. It further bans the ranking of those companies' own services above competitors and requires them to allow third-party app stores. In addition, the commission is also considering probing Amazon for potentially giving preferential treatment to its own products on the e-commerce platform. If found guilty of violating the DMA, the companies can be fined up to 10% of their global revenue, which is in the hundreds of billions of dollars for each involved. All three companies, as well as Amazon, have responded to the announcement by stating they have and will continue to comply with the DMA. All right, narrative A on this story comes from The Verge. The DMA seems like a noble pursuit, but it could wind up making things worse because of the market manipulation loopholes these companies created in preparation for the law. For example, Apple has scrapped its 15-30% revenue fee on competing developers, replacing it with a 50-cent fee for apps with over a million downloads, leaving the competition better off sticking with the original fee. And narrative B comes from the Christian Science Monitor. Big tech's legal loopholes don't negate the historic nature of the DMA. Europeans now have a clearer understanding of their app options, not to mention the new ability to prevent companies from tracking their data. As for loopholes like Apple's 50-cent rule, the commission will undoubtedly probe this move and strike it down if it's found to be in violation of the law. And in nerd narrative from Attaculous, there's an 80% chance that Apple will allow sideloading or other app stores on its iPhones in the European Union before January 1st, 2026. And now back to the United States as Boeing's CEO resigns as part of a leadership shakeup. The facts on this story are agreed upon by Forbes, Business Insider, Bloomberg, Politico, and CBS. Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun on Monday announced his resignation effective at the end of the year, and the aerospace manufacturer announced several other changes to its leadership. The firm faces ongoing scrutiny from regulators and customers in light of the January mid-cabin blowout of a door plug on a Boeing 737 MAX 9 Alaska Airlines flight. In addition to Calhoun's planned departure, Boeing commercial president and CEO Stan Deal will retire and immediately cede his role to Stephanie Pope, who has been Boeing's chief operating officer since January. Also, Chair Larry Kellner will not stand for re-election, and the board has voted for him to be replaced by Steve Mollenkopf. These changes come days after a report said Kellner was scheduled to meet with top executives from some of Boeing's largest airline customers, but without Calhoun to obtain feedback. Since the Alaska Airlines incident, the Federal Aviation Administration and National Transportation Safety Board have opened investigations into Boeing and its contractor, Spirit AeroSystems. Earlier this month, the DOJ also began an investigation of the door plug incident to determine whether anything related to it violated a deferred prosecution agreement the company and DOJ entered into in 2021 after two fatal 737 MAX crashes. All right, those were the facts on this ongoing drama at the aerospace giant. Let's start our spins with Narrative A from CNBC. Calls for change at Boeing have been heard and things are going to change under new leaders. The Alaska Airlines incident was a watershed moment for turning things around, and the company will emerge from this situation stronger than ever, with quality and safety first and foremost in everyone's minds. Customers and passengers can rest assured Boeing will do better moving forward. Narrative B comes from Alternet. Changing people on the company's leadership chart won't change things at Boeing until it rethinks the way it does business. For too long, ownership has valued profits and cost-cutting over safety. Too many of the people in power come from the financial industry. Fundamental changes, not changes in leadership, must be made to secure the company's future and make flying in Boeing's planes safer. And a nerd narrative from Metaculus, there's a 50% chance that the price of Boeing stock at market close March 29th, 2024, will be at least $189 per share. Sunak announces a major initiative for nuclear energy and submarines. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the Westmoreland and Furness Council, Fortune Europe, The Independent, and a UK government press release. UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has declared a national endeavour for a £763 million or $964 million American dollar investment in nuclear energy by 2030, including over £200 million to secure Barrow as the site for the UK's nuclear submarine building. The programme, which will partner with companies including BAE Systems, Rolls-Royce, EDF, and Babcock, is projected to create over 8,000 career opportunities and fill 40,000 new jobs by 2030. The Barrow Transformation Fund will also receive a minimum of £20 million a year for 10 years. While the Barrow facility will receive £200 million, the government will invest another £353 million in apprenticeships and skills trainings in the military and civil nuclear industries to bolster the nuclear deterrent against the Russian threat. The Barrow facility is leading the development of the UK's Astute-class nuclear submarines, as well as the Dreadnought and AUKUS nuclear submarine program, a joint venture between Australia, the UK, and the US. While the defense aspect is aimed at making the Dreadnought nuclear deterrent submarine serviceable by the early 2030s, the additional £20 million will go toward local community projects in Barrow and Furness, including building homes and transportation, as well as supporting local schools. Those were the facts. Here are our narrative spins, starting with the pro-establishment narrative from The Telegraph. The UK is living up to its promises alongside the US and Australia. As China grows increasingly aggressive on the nuclear weapons front, Western military superpowers must stay ahead by developing state-of-the-art nuclear submarines, which is where the Barrow facility steps in with the help of BAE Systems and Rolls-Royce. The UK is creating a world-class green energy sector that not only powers economies, but also protects them from their nuclear-powered enemies. And an establishment critical narrative from We Don't Have Time. The UK should be commended for investing in nuclear energy, which is one of the most important renewable resources for combating and mitigating climate change. However, any money spent on nuclear power should be directed into renewable energy rather than armaments. It is not only the safest and best decision, but the non-proliferation treaty of the 20th century compels nuclear-armed countries not to enhance their nuclear weapon capabilities. And finally, a nerd narrative from Metaculus, there's a 50% chance that 8.3% of global primary consumption will be powered by nuclear energy in 2040. Nigeria's army rescues abducted students. Here are the facts. As agreed upon by Reuters, Sky News, CBC, Voice of America, UPI, and The Guardian. In an operation on Sunday, the Nigerian military rescued students and staff from a school in Kuriga in northwestern Kaduna State, who had been kidnapped by a terrorist group earlier this month, just before the ransom payment of 1 billion naira, or 690,000 American dollars, deadline. The operation in the neighboring state of Zamfara resulted in the release of 137 captives. According to the military spokesperson, 76 female and 61 male hostages were released. The gunmen initially captured 287 staff members and students. According to a security source, the abducted students were located in a jungle 200 kilometers away when they were rescued. Following medical treatment, they will be reunited with their families. Uba Sani, governor of Kaduna State, stated the abducted Kuriga schoolchildren are released unharmed. According to press reports, the children were between 8 and 15. Sani expressed gratitude to the troops, stating, "This is indeed a day of joy." Mass kidnappings have escalated across Nigeria's northern regions ever since the jihadist group Boko Haram kidnapped 276 students from a girls' school in 2014, according to Human Rights Watch. Kidnapping students and demanding ransoms has become a popular method for criminal gangs. Such kidnappings compel families and towns to sell grain, livestock, and land to get the money necessary to pay a ransom for the children's release. Voice of America brings us Narrative A. The military's successful rescue operation and the release of hostages are wonderful news. Experts believe the economic crisis is fueling the surge in school attacks and abductions as an increasing number of Nigerians resort to criminal activity as a means of livelihood. Nigeria has pledged to tighten up security and bring all abducted school children back to their families. And narrative B comes from CBS. Nigeria's northwestern Kaduna state has suffered 4 school abductions in the last 4 years. The central government does not control its territory, and hundreds of thousands of internally displaced people live in government camps under appalling circumstances. It's good news that the military was able to bring these children home. However, there are still many more missing. The government is responsible for ensuring that all children can come back home. In a nerd narrative from Metaculus, there's a 35% chance that Nigeria will experience a successful coup d'etat before 2040. Our final story, the UK faces a sickness-related employment crisis. Here are the facts, as agreed upon by Guardian, BBC News, The Resolution Foundation, The Telegraph, and Bloomberg. According to an analysis by The Resolution Foundation, a British think tank, the UK is in the middle of the longest sustained rise in the number of working-age adults who are economically inactive due to sickness. The number of people quitting the workforce due to long-term sickness rose from 2.1 million in July 2019 to 2.8 million in October 2023, the longest sustained increase in sickness-related inactivity on record. The think tank finds that long-term sickness, when adults between 16 and 64 are neither in work nor looking for a job because of ill health, has increased since July 2019, the longest upward trend since 1994 to 98. The analysis also finds that 90% of the increase in overall economic inactivity had been driven by younger adults aged between 16 and 24 and older adults aged between 50 and 64 since the start of COVID. A total of 9.25 million working-age adults are now classified as economically inactive in the UK, which is reportedly the only G7 country yet to return to its pre-COVID employment rates. With 600,000 more working-age Britons than before the COVID pandemic reporting they are too sick to work, the UK may need up to £16 billion, or $20.1 billion American dollars, to cover the spiraling cost of disability benefits over the next 5 years. And we have some narrative spins on our final story. Express.uk brings us the right narrative. The UK should be wary about its benefits system, which encourages people not to return to work and claim health-related benefits instead. The extraordinary rise in disability benefits claims has weakened the economy, crippled the exchequer, and caused enormous strains on the NHS. The Independent brings us the left narrative spin. A benefits crackdown is unlikely to solve the UK's jobless crisis. Only improved mental health and musculoskeletal care infrastructure, shortened NHS waiting lists, and extensive budget measures to boost the labor force can help tackle the country's economic inactivity challenge. And we have a nerd narrative from Metaculus. There's a 50% chance that the unemployment rate in the Eurozone will be at least 6.3% in 2025. Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Tuesday, March 26, 2024. Each day, we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ. For more information on Verity, visit our website, verity.news. You can also download the Verity app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. I'm Scott Wallace. Join me next time on the Verity Podcast. Mm-hmm.